You were a policeman for 14 years, and your books have gone a long way to humanize the policeman. But I kind of wonder if a lot of people haven't been shocked by your portrayal of officers in your books.
Probably a lot of policemen have been shocked by my portrayal, because I don't attempt to portray, let's say, the average workaday cop doing his job and going home happily to his wife and kids. The cops I write about are those who have suffered police stress, who are emotionally wounded, who are distraught, hanging on the edge of a cliff, so to speak, because they interest me. And police stress and police cynicism is an important phenomenon that needs to be explored, and I prefer to do it dramatically rather than write essays about it. So all of my policemen are really desperate people, and I always try to make that clear. I'm not saying that all policemen are as the suicidal cop in the Glitter Dome, for instance, or the choir boys, or some of those people, but they are the policemen who interest me.
Well, policemen are supposed to be professional and above the emotions of the street, above the emotions of other people. But I guess when you come right down to it, there is no way for a policeman to be any different from anybody else, is there?
No, and he's been given the most stressful job in America, in the world. I feel that though there are lots of jobs that carry tremendous responsibility, that are tremendously busy and produce stress because of certain threats the jobs have inherent in them, nothing is quite like police work, because it produces a unique kind of stress, a stress which results from cynicism, from the feeling that people are not salvageable, that the human race is irredeemably bad or weak or hopeless. That's a unique kind of stress. That goes right to the soul of a man. And I don't know of any other stress that can compare with that kind of cynical stress.
Joseph Wambaugh, the question of police brutality comes up frequently, especially when you hear about cities such as Houston or Philadelphia. And indeed, in the Glitter Dome, you describe the beating of a gay activist by two police officers with very little provocation. Now, is there ever a time when police brutality can be justified?
Well, I don't think any kind of brutality can ever be justified, police or otherwise. I merely, in my books, portray acts of violence as I know them. Perhaps given the circumstances surrounding the lives that the characters lead, one might take away from scenes that I write, a certain sympathy for the victim or the brutalizer. It's difficult to say. I suppose one has to look at each case in context, but I don't attempt to propagandize for the police. I wouldn't do that, and nor do I patronize anybody. I'll present gay activists or cops in an honest way, and let the chips fall as they may.
Well, when police officers do things like that, are they doing it for fun, or do they do it to release their own frustrations, or why?
I can only talk specifically about the cops in the book, for instance, in this specific case, because you're asking me to make a general statement about cops,
I suppose. Well, now, you were on the force 14 years, and you probably, obviously, you write from a lot of personal experience.
Yes, but how can I say whether a cop does it for fun or because he's stressed out until you give me the circumstances of the case? One thing about police work, it is specific. Policemen learn not to make general statements. The first thing a cop learns when he handles a domestic dispute is that there are two sides to every story, and that's an easy thing for a rookie to learn, because when he goes out there and hears a dreadful story in the middle of the night about how a husband beat his wife up or something, and he's getting ready to throw the husband in jail and has him handcuffed, taking him down the stairs, and suddenly the wife jumps on the policeman's back and starts pummeling him for taking her husband away to jail, a young officer learns that there are two sides to every story. So brutality by policemen could be stress-induced. I suppose it could be because some sadist got through the system and uses police work as a means to satisfy unwholesome ambitions, you know. So it's impossible for me to say unless we talk about a specific case.
All right. How do you stop police brutality?
Well, once again, we have to get specific about brutality because some people describe brutality as chewing out a motorist, for instance.
Let me rephrase it. Yes. How do you go about creating a professional police department which is above acts of violence of that nature?
I believe that inherent in the United States Constitution and in the laws of most municipalities, if not all, is a certain amount of protection against the criminal acts of police or torts. Remember, police are subject to the same laws that you and I are subject to. So there are certain torts built into the law. If someone beats you up, it is a crime. If a policeman beats you up, it is a crime. It can be a worse crime if a policeman beats you up. I suppose that if police departments don't have built-in safeguards, that is, a selection system that checks into a man's background thoroughly, if it doesn't have psychological testing, if it doesn't have standards that a cop must meet, if it doesn't have a police academy, if it doesn't have a professional police force, then you get what you deserve, because I guarantee you your city will be just as inefficient and corrupt as your police department. You cannot have a corrupt and inefficient or a brutal police department unless you have a corrupt, inefficient, and brutal city government. And one goes hand in hand with the other.
Policemen can be very intimidating when they want to be. I remember a thing. It had to do with my driver's license. There's a misprint on it. It lists my height as 5'11 instead of 5'10. So several years ago, I took a friend who just returned from working in London at Reuters up to the driving course in the Bronx, where he had to pass this course in order to get a new license. Well, he had to be accompanied by a licensed driver. I was that driver. The police officer who gave the test looked at my license and said, "You're not 5'11. And he walked off with my license. Well, my friend took the test, and I didn't see the policeman again, and I finally spotted him and went over to him, and I said, "Can I have my license back, please?" And he just sort of snorted at me and walked off and vanished. We stood around, our hands up in the air. We didn't know what was going on. Finally, I saw him again about 10 minutes later, and I walked over to him and I said, "I'd like to have my license back, and if there's any problem, I'd like to speak to your supervisor." At which point, he took my license and he thrust it at me. There was no reason for that. I mean, it was just that maybe he had a bad night.
Well, I've had radio announcers treat me the same way, actually.
And movie producers.
I suppose that you could have made a complaint to a supervisor anyway, but you use the term policeman.
Mm-hmm.
Do they actually have sworn police officers at the Motor Vehicle Department?
Oh,
we
do.
Certainly
yeah.
Don't have them in California.
Yes.
New York City police officer?
New York City police officers operated, at that time at least, operated the...
Because sometimes, you know, because a person has some sort of a badge or official uniform, doesn't make them policemen. And policemen
I hung
get
around precinct station at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Policemen get bum raps. But anyway, I won't tell you any stories about how radio announcers have been rude to me if you don't tell me any more of those stories.
Okay. In The Choir Boys, as I recall, the characters, some of the characters behave very irresponsibly. You know, they drank and they partied in that park. They did such things as... As I recall, shooting their guns off at ducks in the pond, wasn't that right?
Yeah.
Well, in fact, we hear a lot about police officers discharging their weapons in bars, at their wives, at neighbors, and so forth. What about ending the custom of permitting policemen to carry their weapons around the clock? New York City, for example, has started a program that will allow the officer not to take his gun with him when he goes to the beach or to a party.
I think it'd be a wonderful idea. More policemen get in trouble off-duty with guns than function well off-duty with guns. I know that you had a policeman recently in New York who very heroically got into a gunfight off-duty and shot down an armed robber and was himself shot. So, yes, occasionally we're all the better for it because a cop's carrying a gun off duty. But on the other hand, I just came from Chicago, and the second in command in that police department happened to be sitting in a restaurant off duty and was asked to do a little police work by the restaurant proprietor, who had a drunk that was giving him some trouble, and that drunk shot and killed that police official, you see. So I'm for policemen not carrying guns off duty, especially in situations where they're drinking, where they're in bars, where they're in restaurants. But if that's the case, then the rest of us have to stop expecting them to be policemen 24 hours a day. And we have to stop asking them to do police work when they're not on duty, as was the case in Chicago. And so it's not quite as simple as it seems, and it seems to me that it's up to the people to decide which they want. You can't have it both ways.
Are you worried about the proliferation of handguns throughout the nation?
I think that it's time for gun control. I think I know it's an emotional issue, and despite what President Reagan said recently, I think he's wrong, and I believe that the right to keep and bear arms is not necessarily entitle us to keep and bear Saturday night specials. I mean, why can't we keep long guns, that is, rifles and shotguns? There are hunting weapons. There are target weapons, I suppose. And indeed, they could even protect you if you felt the need for protection in your house. But they're a little bit more trouble for you to discharge accidentally. They're a little more trouble for you to handle. They're a little more trouble for someone to conceal. No, they're a lot more trouble for someone to conceal. So I believe there would be far fewer accidents with guns in the home. There would be far fewer terrible domestic shootings and everything else if we simply went through the extra step of having to handle a gun, which is a little more difficult to find access to, and that would be a rifle or a shotgun. I think it's time for us to give up the Saturday night specials, unless we're legitimate target shooters, you see. And there are so few of those that guns in their hands, legitimate licensed target shooters, wouldn't cause much problem. It's all these other guns that are good for one thing and one thing only, killing human beings. They're not good for anything else. So I'd like to see us one day get some sort of sane gun policy, and let's give up these man-killing guns.
After the publication of your books, you remained on the Los Angeles police force, I understand. Did this cause any problem? The very frank depictions of certain officers, for example, in your books, did this ruffle feathers, make it difficult for you to carry out your functions?
Well, yes.
Sergeant, weren't you?
Yes, yes, I'm sure it does. And matter of fact, I talked to a policeman today, a New York policeman, who told me that he was offended by the choir boys, didn't understand the treatment, the black humor, the savage humor, dark humor of the choir boys, and thought that it did a disservice to policemen, that it was, presented policemen in a vulgar and frivolous light. But I pointed out to him that maybe he should try it again someday if he ever has the time. Not that I recommend people spend their lives reading my books, but that it was a serious book, deadly serious. The Choir Boys was a deadly serious book, as is the Glitter Dome, which is billed as some sort of a raucous dark comedy, is a serious book. Beneath dark comedy, beneath savage caricature and all of that, it generally lies a very serious story that the author chooses to deal with in terms of parody or satire. It's much easier, I think, to deal with horrific material. At least it's easier for me to deal with horrific material by defensive humor, using techniques of defensive humor, than it is to deal with it straight. And police work can get pretty horrific, and the humor can get pretty ghoulish and pretty dark, you know.
One of the funniest things in the Glitter Dome, although, as you say, it's a serious book, had to do with the Hollywood party. Party had all these backbiting, superficial, pretentious people. Apparently, you aren't too happy with the Hollywood set.
No, it's that's another thing. You know, I'm deadly serious about my dislike, I suppose, for certain people in the movie industry. I've gotten in so many lawsuits that it's getting to be a myth. I had a dreadful time, but rather than get hysterical, it's easier to deal with that kind of feeling, that kind of emotion, with caricature. So I have fun with the Hollywood party scene in the Glitter Dome, and hopefully it's funny. by introducing these policemen into the Hollywood party, and it's a very exotic world for them, as it is for most of us, by the way. So when one is trying to solve a murder of a Hollywood executive, and one is a homicide detective, and suddenly finds himself in a coke-whiffing Hollywood party, it can make for some bizarre, funny, and colorful incidents. And so I enjoyed using comedy to deal with those things. But once again, underlying all that wild, wacky comedy in the Glitter Dome is a serious book, I think.
Are you going to have anything to do with the making of the movie of Glitter Dome?
I'm going to take the money if they offer it and roller skate away, as one of the characters does in the Glitter Dome.
Hill Street Blues on television sounds very much as though they had lifted many chapters from you.
I've been told that. I haven't seen it. People have told me that. And if they did, I don't care. You know, flattery is the highest form of something or other. Or wait a minute, is it imitation? In any case, I may have gotten it backwards.
You have written about police officers in a somewhat negative way in many respects in all of your books. What, maybe this goes back to what I asked you earlier, but what do you think can be done to improve the overall image of the policeman?
Well, you know, first of all, I think a careful reading through the vulgarity of the world that I depict will probably lead you to the conclusion that there is indeed an affection for policemen, and I think there is on my part. But I don't know. I believe the policemen are as good as we are, and no better. If you're going to try to improve your police department, then look to yourself. Let's improve your government. As I say, one goes hand in hand with the other. If you are willing to tolerate a certain amount of lawlessness because it appeals to you, whether it's the numbers racket or whether it's some other what you would consider petty vice, whether it's driving with disregard for traffic or walking with disregard for traffic, as I see millions of people doing in New York, then you'll have a police force which overlooks quote-unquote petty crimes and vices and so forth. And after a while, crime and vice taken on a quantitative basis is no longer so petty. There's a certain order required by the people who live in, let's say, Western United States in general, in cities in the West, that is not required by cities who live in the East. I'm from Pittsburgh, and I was 14 years old when we moved to California, and I didn't even know at that time that playing numbers was illegal, because everybody had done it my entire life, and I had no idea that there were a bunch of bad men making hundreds of millions of dollars a year with this quote-unquote petty vice, which we all indulged in, you see.
I'm from Pittsburgh, too, but from the Fox Chapel area, I never heard of numbers.
Well, I'm from East Pittsburgh, which is probably the wrong side of the tracks, and we lived and died by what we dreamed the night before because it translated into a number which we could play. That's just one example. So we will get the police force that we deserve, and of that you can be sure.
Who are your friends? You know, most policemen seem to be exclusively other policemen. What about you? After, of course, you're an ex-policeman now. Does this change things?
Well, sure. I'm in another world now. You can't go home again very easily. So as my life started changing, as I became a more successful writer, naturally I moved into different It moved in different circles. Policemen treated me differently. Policemen generally treat me like a celebrity now if I meet them in different towns. So in no way am I one of them. It's nice to look back and wish that I could be, but I can't be a policeman again any more than I can be young again. It's just wistful thinking. So my friends are just the same people who are your friends, I suppose, neighbors.
And Hollywood producers.
Not too many of those. I don't get invited to too many Hollywood parties because I've sued too many people in Hollywood as a result of my motion picture endeavors.
What's next for Joseph Wombaugh?
I don't really have a project going now. Just doing a little promotion for this book, which I'm wrapping up now, and I might look for a story to do. I might like to try another nonfiction book, which I did with the Onion Field. something on that order, if I could find a story that would interest me.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Thank you.